Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have Sherry Turcos as my special expert guest. Sherry is a holistic pharmacist, author, and lecturer. She received her Bachelor of Science degree in pharmacy from the Philadelphia College of Pharmacy and Science in 1992. She's a practicing pharmacist at Falls Pharmacy, Niagara Falls in Ontario. And in 1999, she received the J.C. Gould Memorial Award for Distinguished Practice. Sherry has authored 5 books and is presently working on her 6th, entitled Breaking the Age Barrier, scheduled for publication this fall. Sherry is a frequent guest on radio and TV talk shows where she discusses a variety of complementary medicine and pharmaceutical topics. She is also a member of the Expert Editorial Advisory Panel, selected by the Canadian Health Food Association to assist in the editing and promotion of the Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Education Program. Hi, Sherry. Welcome to Sports Nutrition Update.
Hi there, Corey. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's talk about your involvement in pharmaceutical medicine and the natural health field. Why did someone like yourself decide to become a pharmacist?
Well, my desire to get into this profession came from my interest in health and medicine and science. When I was a teenager, I volunteered at a hospital pharmacy in the town I grew up in, Port Colborne, and I found pharmaceutical drugs very fascinating, the fact that they could be used to help treat diseases, and I was very intrigued by all that. And so I went to pharmacy school in Philadelphia, and I went to an excellent school, had a fantastic education, and it was during this educational process and what I experienced afterwards that I became more interested on the other end of things, more of the preventative side. But I still have the opportunity to use my background and my knowledge of disease states and medicines and so forth in the type of pharmacy practice that I'm involved in.
So what was it like going to school in Philadelphia?
Well, Philadelphia was fantastic. It had everything, shopping and arts and entertainment. It's a big American city. There's lots of action, lots going on. So it was a good educational experience for me all around, especially growing up in a small town in southern Ontario, first time to live in a big city, and it was an eye-opener in a lot of ways.
I guess it's not that far from where you are.
No, it's about an eight-hour drive from where I live. And so my friends and family would frequently drive up to go to Phillies games and Flyers and to hang out and visit, so it was nice.
Now, if somebody wants to be a pharmacist, what type of education is required? What is the process that's involved?
Well, it's changed. Currently, in most provinces, you have to have a science degree or 2 years of science before you can be considered to get into the pharmacy program. And then, depending on what province or state you're going to, it's anywhere from 3 to 5 years. At the time that I went in, it was an entry-level program. I did go to school in Ontario before I went into pharmacy school. I went to McMaster University and studied natural sciences, but so I had that 1 year behind me. When I went into Philadelphia, they took me as a second-year student, so it was a 5-year program in total. So most of the programs now, they vary from 3 to 5 years of pharmacy, and then you have to have a university science background to get into that. And we find most of the states are now offering PharmD, a doctor of pharmacy degree, as an entry-level position, and it's a 6-year program.
So you have to have some science and...
A lot of science, a lot of chemistry, biology, some physics, obviously math and so forth. That's involved mostly in the first 2 years, and then you really get into pharmaceutics, understanding... We calculate things in the body, distribution, clearance, elimination, how drugs are absorbed, how they work. We learn pharmacology, mechanisms of action, how all these drugs work in our body, the good and the bad of it all, as far as their benefits and their side effects. And that's pretty intensive. In fact, we study drug therapy for several years, and there's just so many drugs and there's so much to know. And what always amazes me is that in medicine, most doctors receive only 1 to 2 semesters of pharmacology, and they're out there prescribing these drugs that a lot of them have confessed to me that they know very little about. It's good to see that pharmacists are becoming more involved in monitoring patient therapy and making therapeutic choices, because we really have, the knowledge and expertise to be in that position.
Now, you're working in the pharmacy. What's an average day like in the life of Sherry as a pharmacist?
Well, right now I'm doing a lot of consulting. I still do work part-time in pharmacy because I like to keep involved in that, and I would never want to lose you know, my touch or also my knowledge base with pharmaceutical drugs. But my typical day is a little different than most pharmacists. Most people think of their pharmacist as someone that advises them on how to take their medications and fills their prescriptions and so forth. I do all of those things, your typical pharmacy things, but I also like to spend time working with people on prevention and teaching them about the power of nutrition and exercise and all of these things and how that can help to improve their health, whether we're talking about menopause or heart disease or diabetes. Almost every condition I could talk about, there are so many valuable ways in which we can use our lifestyle choices to influence that. So I spend a great deal of time talking to people about that and counseling and also advising them on using natural products, vitamins, herbs, supplements, sometimes in place of their prescription drugs and sometimes to complement or to make up for a side effect or a deficiency that could be caused by taking a pharmaceutical drug. So that's how I really, my practice differs. And we are seeing more pharmacists today that are starting to become more involved in this way.
There's a lot of TV advertising from the pharmaceutical industry and even chains of pharmacies that are focusing on customer service. That's a big factor, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It is. Years ago, the job of a pharmacist was basically filling prescriptions, of course, making sure that it's the right drug, that there aren't any side effects or interactions with other drugs, and advising you on it. But there has been a great emphasis in the past few years on counseling and education, because the technical aspects of it, filling the prescription, counting the pills, labeling it, the lickstick count and pour, we call it, anybody can do that. You don't need a 5 or 6 year degree to do that. The emphasis is now on using the knowledge that we have to educate people on how to properly use their medications. If they're diabetic, how to be taking their insulin or taking their pills that they're taking, to educate them on nutrition and how a little bit of exercise can help control their blood sugar. And a lot of the pharmacies are now really strongly encouraging that. In fact, in Ontario here, it's mandated by our college that we do counsel all patients on all new prescriptions, and we actually have to sign off that we've done so. And I know most other provinces have that in place as well.
That's a good standard.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's very important. I think that there currently are still problems where people are taking medications the wrong way, or they're taking one drug from one pharmacy, going to another doctor in another pharmacy, maybe it's a specialist out of town, they're taking that, and sometimes they could be mixing things, getting side effects, interactions. But yet, if you have the time to talk to a patient and you get that information out of them, find out what herbs or supplements they're taking, because again, that fits into the puzzle and could affect their therapy. So that's really where the movement's been, and it's a good thing.
Now, you've got training in both conventional and complementary medicine. You're working with a wide range of people, you know, various ages, backgrounds. In your experience, what advantage does your approach have, like by mixing the conventional with the so-called holistic over the conventional method alone?
Well, there are a lot of benefits for me and for the patient. I can speak for myself what I feel is beneficial. I feel greater satisfaction in what I'm doing, knowing that I'm not just putting a Band-Aid on a cut to fix a problem. I'm not just handing somebody, you know, drugs to lower their blood pressure. I'm actually teaching them about how they can do, how they can lower their blood pressure and improve other health parameters through nutrition and exercise and supplements. And I think there's also a great advantage for patients as well, getting involved in their own health care rather than just relying on that prescription that the doctor hands them and that bottle of pills to fix their problems. We know that that's not the answer. The cause of disease is so multifactorial, and there's so many ways in which we can utilize other things to help treat. And I find that the people that I have worked with have come back to me time and time again to thank me for the help that I've been able to give them, because they feel more empowered, they feel more in charge. They're feeling better overall because, you know, let's face it, as drugs do have many life-saving benefits, they can also be toxic and cause a lot of problems. And I think that overall, most people would not want to rely on a drug for the rest of their lives. If they can find ways to treat their condition naturally or to prevent it, they're going to be a lot better off.
Now, is this approach something that a pharmacist would have to develop as a function of being involved in the field, or would they be exposed to this option in their standard training?
Well, it's something that's starting to be introduced more in pharmacy schools. It's been a slow process, as with the medical schools. It was a big deal when they started introducing courses on herbal medicine As far as nutrition goes, I took one course on nutrition while I was in school, and you know, I've since taken other courses and programs. It's been a lot of further investigation and education in that area. And it's unfortunate that they don't include that in curriculums as standard, but I know most medical schools as well, they receive very little, most doctors receive very little knowledge and training on good nutrition. That's starting to change, but I think overall people that take on a holistic approach, in my experience, are those that are take it up because of their genuine interests, maybe a personal experience, maybe they themselves have suffered a condition that was not responsive to the conventional treatments, so that's made them look into alternatives or to take charge of their life and make some changes in other areas. Hopefully we will see more of an integration in the future. I know there are some medical schools that are starting to teach more integrative medicine, and again, some pharmacies too are starting to integrate it a little bit more as well.
Do you have a fair degree of freedom in your practice? Like, can you recommend dietary supplements and vitamins and minerals without discretion based on what you feel is appropriate, or are there definite guidelines and lines you can't cross over because that person's coming in from seeing, say, a physician?
No, we do have our own discretion to make recommendations, and we have the ability to use our own professional judgment and also to refuse filling a prescription. And there have been a few instances where a patient's presented to me a prescription for something that is maybe inappropriate, maybe has not been well thought out by the doctor. I could give you an example. A patient who came to me, she was very upset, stressed out. She wasn't sleeping well. She was going through some things in her life, and she went to the doctor's office. She waited for about an hour and a half, 2 hours to see the doctor. He gave her 2.5 to 3 minutes of his time, and she left with a prescription for an antidepressant, a very strong antidepressant. And when she presented the prescription, I asked her, do you know, understand what he's giving you today? And she said, yeah, it was just something to help me relax. And it was after talking to her about what she was given and you know, the potential drawbacks of it, and was this really necessary, we decided not to go ahead with it. And in that case, I would let the doctor know or call his nurse and let him know that she's decided not to get it filled. I would never tell a patient not to take their medication, but I will sometimes educate them on the pros and the cons and other options, and it's up to them to make that decision. And when it comes to something like depression, of course, there is real, true clinical depression, which often requires temporary and sometimes long-term treatment, but sometimes there's situational depression or there's causes of depression other than just biochemical imbalances. There's food allergies, there's, you know, there's stress, there's marital problems. There's a lot of things that can bring it on, so sometimes it's getting at the bottom of those causes rather than just taking an antidepressant.
In that situation, in that example, did you recommend an alternative? And if you didn't, or whether you did, what would you recommend, say, something more natural or safe, say, for treating depression or in that situation, based on your discretion?
For that particular patient, yes, we did. We talked a lot about stress management and breathing techniques and taking time for herself. She was feeling overwhelmed and she wasn't sleeping. And I talked about the importance of getting a little bit more physical exercise and activity and how that can actually improve her sleep. Most people, they find they're not sleeping well and they're tired and they think they don't have the time or the energy to exercise. But you know, I was telling her about how you feel energized when you exercise and you also sleep better. There's so many benefits. And you know, I encouraged her to come out. I teach a class at the Y, to come out to my class, and or even just to take 10, 15 minutes a day to have a nice walk. We talked about nutrition, and we also talked about other supplements. I recommended some minerals. I recommended a multivitamin, and I also recommended that if she did just figure that those other things weren't working, that maybe we would try the St. John's wort, which in her case was appropriate. With St. John's wort, you have to be careful because there are some interactions with other drugs and certain precautions, so that's something I like to look at carefully before I make a recommendation.
So that would be the advantage of being a pharmacist, is that you understand those interactions. Sometimes people take a natural remedy and they're taking a drug and they don't really see that connection.
That's right, and even though natural products, we think of them as safer, they too can have side effects, interactions, and that's why it's always a good idea to check. And it's great now that we have a lot of resources available to us, even online. There are some really good websites that people can utilize to find out about drug interactions. It's healthwell.com, and I've used that quite frequently to look up different things.
Healthwell.com?
Yes.
Okay, great reference. Now, you're into training, you're in great shape, you're even certified as a personal trainer, and you've mentioned already the significance of exercise, and you share that with your your patients and clients. I was on your website. I came across an article that caught my interest called Concentrate on the Core. What is the core, and why is this region of the body so important for athletes and health in general?
Well, your core muscles are the muscles of your trunk, your torso. It's your back, your abs, your pelvic, your hip muscles. And those are some of the most important muscles to stabilize your body. And if you have a strong core, you're often able to withstand things that would otherwise put people in a compromising position. For example, reaching into a car, lifting out something heavy, picking your kid up off the floor, lifting, twisting, turning. We're constantly using our abdominal and back muscles, and if they're not strong and flexible and able to adapt to daily activities, the simplest thing can throw your back out or can cause injury. So our core muscles are really important to help keep us stabilized and to be able to perform our activities of daily living.
So what do you do for your core? How do you train your own core?
I do abdominal exercises in my class. I teach a variety of exercises. Some of them are laying on your back. Some of them are actually with your, would be prone with your stomach down towards the floor. The plank exercises, are you familiar with those?
Yes.
Where you go up on your forearms and you lift your toes up and you're kind of tucking in and holding. You have to keep your pelvis down towards the floor. I find that's very effective. So I use those for abdominals. For back, we do different exercises, the deadlifts, we do lat pull downs, we do the spinal extensor exercises where you're lifting alternate arm, alternate leg. There are a variety of things that I do in my class, some of them with weights, some of them with no weights, just using your body weight to do the exercise. And that's what's great. Once you start learning about the power of exercise and things that you can do within your own home, there's so much you can do with your own body weight, which is good, I think, for people to know, because sometimes that's an obstacle. People don't exercise because they say, you know, I don't have the money or I can't afford a gym membership. Lots you can do even in the comfort of your own home without any cost.
Now, you're a great writer, and you've got some new books out, one in particular, Winning at Weight Loss. With all this confusion and hype in the weight loss category, what advice do you have for someone looking for guidance in this area?
Well, this is a big area because, with half of our population being overweight, everybody is desperate to lose weight and to do it quickly. Most people I talk to are looking for quick fixes. They want that magic pill or potion. My advice to people is supplements can help, but the key component to losing weight successfully and transforming your body, not losing weight, losing your fat, is healthy eating, not dieting, healthy eating and exercise. So in my booklet, Winning at Weight Loss, and also in my new book, Breaking the Age Barrier, I talk a lot about that, the benefits of weight training, building muscle mass, and I know you and I, Corey, think a lot alike in this regard, that's a critical part to this, is weight training, building your muscle mass, driving up your metabolism, eating small, frequent meals throughout the day, not dieting, not restricting yourself by eating one meal a day, giving up the junk food and choosing the whole natural foods in their natural form. Eating foods with low glycemic index, trying to be mindful about everything you put in your mouth. Because unfortunately today, many of us are relying on fast food and processed food and junk food that really has little nutritional value but very dense in calories.
Do you think junk food is addictive?
Oh, definitely. I've talked to people that are addicted to junk food. They're addicted to hamburgers and french fries. I was going to say fast food chain, but we'll keep that out of it. Addicted to pizza, to soda pop, to chocolate. Yeah, I do think that junk food is addictive for certain people and also for certain personality types. I think if people knew what was in that food and if they saw the chemicals and the garbage, I really question as to whether they would even choose to put it in their bodies.
Now, regarding addiction, how would you treat that? Like someone that's addicted to a particular food or substance, would it be similar to how you would treat, say, a recreational or prescription drug addiction?
Well, if with food addiction, yes, I think that a person in that situation may need some counseling, some psychological counseling to get at the cause of why they're addicted to eating their certain foods. But then there's also the chemical addiction and that becomes a little bit trickier because people, it's like caffeine, for example, people that are hooked on having caffeine every day, when they stop drinking it, their coffee or their Coke, they get a withdrawal headache, and they feel lethargic, and sometimes they can get anxious and tremors, and there are supplements that can help with that, but really what it is, it's cleansing your system, and you're going to be uncomfortable and maybe even miserable for a couple of days to a couple of weeks, but you have to be focused on the end result and knowing that you're doing your body good and that you will get over that tough time.
What are your thoughts regarding the use of ephedrine? Do you promote the use of thermogenic agents, and if not, what supplements do you recommend to patients who need to lose body fat?
I'm not really big on ephedrine, and the reason I don't like ephedrine and I don't recommend it in my practice is I have seen a lot of people get sick on it. I've seen people that were mixing it with prescription drugs, not realizing that it was going to up their blood pressure, and I've had a patient actually that went into a hypertensive crisis and was hospitalized. He was taking a little of a Proenzi or a supplement with his blood pressure pills, ended up in the hospital, and I even had a hard time, and this was years and years ago when the product was first introduced, and I had a hard time even getting information from the company on what was in their product. At the time, ephedrine was not on the label. It was labeled, I believe, Teamster's tea or something like that. I've had since then a number of instances where people have gotten very sick and ill, and we're also knowledgeable about the media reports on people that have died due to taking ephedrine. Sometimes it's in people that are abusing it, taking too much, high dosages, mixing it with other things. And in other cases, it's been people that had underlying heart problems and did not know it. In my opinion, it's too dangerous for people to be self-selecting. I think it's something that, if it's available, it should be kind of behind the counter so that if someone wants to take it, they get proper advice and counseling on how to take it properly. I don't think it belongs in a self-selection area. Just too many precautions and side effects with it. So that's why I'm not keen on ephedrine. There are other substances which can have some thermogenic properties, as you know, citrus aurantium, green tea, and others, which I think are a little bit milder in their effects, but also a lot safer.
Now, what about pseudoephedrine, like a cough or a cold remedy, and they see ephedrine in there, and they're thinking, well, maybe I should take this to help reduce some body fat. Is that how it works?
Well, you know what? I have had people that have taken it for that reason, that have, you know, taken pseudoephedrine because it'll help them. They know it's going to suppress their appetite. That, all, as well, is dangerous. If you look at the labels with Sudafed, should not be taken by people that have prostate problems, glaucoma, high blood pressure. There are side effects with it as well. It's not quite as potent and dangerous as ephedrine, but it also has its precautions, and that's why usually when people are coming in for cold remedies, the pharmacist is involved in counseling them as well. In the States, I'm not sure whether, I don't think it's the case here in Canada anymore, but in the States, there used to be a product called phenylpropanolamine. Are you familiar
yes.
with that? Yeah, PPA, which also...
they banned it recently, I believe,
yeah,
in Canada.
Yeah, and it's banned in Canada. And
like a pet pill.
Yeah, exactly. And it was marketed as a nasal decongestant, but it also was found in a lot of over-the-counter weight loss products, and same problems as what we saw with ephedrine.
So the connection, like regarding the pharmacology, a person is looking at this product and they know that ephedrine is used to reduce body fat. Why is it in this cold remedy or this sinus remedy in the drugstore?
Because ephedrine, pseudoephedrine also works. It's one of its main actions is as a bronchodilator, and we do use it in the treatment of asthma as well. So it helps to open up the airways, improve oxygenation. It's also used as a decongestant to open up the sinuses. So that's where it has some benefits for cold treatment, is that it helps to open up the sinuses, open up your airways as well. Benefits in asthma, benefits in colds. And some people will take it, though, for that weight loss effect. Although the pseudoephedrine is a little bit milder in its action for weight loss, some people do take it for that reason, but I wouldn't recommend it.
Now, do you get a lot of athletes coming into your store? Perhaps they have a prescription for an anti-inflammatory with a sport injury, or maybe they're asking about performance-enhancing supplements.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see them?
Occasionally. We don't have a huge sports supplement section in the stores that I'm working in right now, but in the past I've worked in places where, yeah, it's something that people are interested in. I think most people go to health food stores for that, or to stores where they know there's a good selection of supplements, but I do recommend protein powders from time to time, and as far as treating sports injuries, you know, sometimes I'm involved with that. People are coming in getting splints, things to help them with their sprains or strains or muscle pulls and tears. I'm not a big advocate of using the non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, namely the ibuprofen. We've got the Vioxx and the Celebrex and all of those drugs, which are okay short-term, but they're not the type of product that you would want to take on a regular basis. A lot of potentially dangerous effects on your stomach as far as leading to bleeding ulcers.
So a basic truism is that all of these substances have potential value if they're used without discretion, without guidance, and if they're used long-term at a high level, that's when you start getting into problems.
That would sum it up correctly.
Okay. Now, you've got a new book coming out, Breaking the Age Barrier. It's about anti-aging or healthy aging.
Yes, healthy aging. It came out in January of this year.
Okay, and you're teaching people how to overcome the limitations of what we think is attached to aging. Why don't you expand on that a little bit and maybe share some of the principles that you write about?
Sure. The book I worked on for a couple of years, I worked along with my friend and colleague, Farid Wassef. He's a pharmacist and a clinical nutrition in Stouffville, Ontario. And we worked together on this book for Penguin. I'm really trying to bring forth our ideas about healthy aging. I prefer to call it a healthy aging book. I'm not big on the anti-aging. We can't turn back the clock, but we know we do have control over how we age. And what Farid and I did in this book is we talked about some of the theories of aging, the antioxidant free radical theory, the wear and tear theory, and the mitochondrial DNA theory, et cetera. And we explored those various theories, and we talked about how it's not just really one theory that it can account for aging. It's obviously a number of processes that are involved and a number of things that can accelerate or slow down the way we age. And we can all think of, in our lives, people that, for instance, are maybe 50, but they look 70. And conversely, we can see people that are, you know, up with vim and vigor playing tennis at 70 years old, and they look like they're 50. My mother's a good example of that, by the way. She is 62 this year, and she looks maybe 40, 45. Plays tennis every day, full of energy, full of vitality. She has purpose in her life, and she lives life with passion, and she really takes care of herself. She exercises, she eats right. And so we drew from that, but we also looked at some good science and hard data, such as that provided by the New England Centenarian Study, which is a study of people that live to be 100 and beyond. And they've identified certain factors that are common among these people and that are important for healthy aging, things such as being able to enjoy life, to have a purpose, to be able to laugh and have fun. People that live to 100 and beyond are not the people that worry about the little things. They can let that roll. They enjoy their lives, they have fun, they have a zest. They're not overweight. If their weight is fluctuated, it's only by about 5 or 10 pounds during their whole lifespan. These are people that don't smoke, or if they did smoke, it was for less than 5 years, and it was a long time ago. They maybe have alcohol in moderation. They're people that have close family ties, that are not loners, but have a lot of people in their lives that they enjoy their lives with. So it was kind of fun getting into that study and looking at these factors, and we wrote about it in the book. And we talked a lot about how people can create emotional balance in their lives, how they can reduce their stress, enhance their outlook and attitude, because attitude is a big part of how you're going to live your life and how you're going to age. We talk about nutrition, of course, and exercise, and how you can avoid some of the saboteurs of health, which are, you know, the stress, the smoking, the couch potatoism, and things like that, things that are known to bring diseased aging and premature aging. We have a lot of questionnaires. We keep the book very interactive. People can calculate their biological age, which is different than your chronological age, such as you, Corey, who are chronologically, I actually don't know your age, but I think you're in your 40s, aren't you?
I'm 45 right now.
45, okay. Who looks and has the body of a 30-year-old or younger.
Okay, you're speaking my language.
But it's true. It's true. I've seen you. I've worked with you, and I've seen your pictures. You're posing and, you know, phenomenal shape. And but that's it's all because you live what you preach to others, and that's healthy living and exercise and all of the things that I believe in as well and that are important for healthy aging. So the book was a lot of fun to work on, and it was enjoyable to work with Farid. He's a pharmacist who I have a lot of respect for, and I've learned a lot from him in my years of practicing, as he's been very involved in functional medicine and integrative medicine, and we toured around, we went to conferences together, and he's been one of my mentors in the industry.
Well, that is quite a rich presentation, lots of information. I'm looking forward to that book, Breaking the Age Barrier. Well, guess what? Our time is up. Can you believe it?
It goes fast.
It was excellent. A lot of incredibly good information, Sherry.
Thank you.
You're a wealth of information, like a typical walking encyclopedia, as they say. Thanks very much for your contribution and everything that you're doing to inspire, motivate people, and give them a sense of purpose and passion.
Well, thanks for having me on your show. I appreciate it.
Now, where can people go to get more information in terms of finding out how to get your books and maybe reading some of your educational articles?
I do have a website which has most of my articles posted on, and that is sherrytorkos.com, and that's SHERRYTORKOS, sherrytorkos.com. You can check that out. And my book's Breaking the Age Barrier, and I also wrote a book, Women's Health for Canadians, that was done in the Complete Idiot's Guide series with Prentice Hall, and that those books are available at all major bookstores, Kohl's, Chapters, Indigo, Smith Books, so you can check that out as well.
Outstanding. Well, thanks very much. And just before you go, would you mind leaving us with some final words of health and fitness advice?
Let me see. Final words of health and fitness. And I guess my advice to everybody is that we're all in control of our destiny. I truly believe that, you know, that we don't have to be laden with necessarily our genetic inheritance. So if you have a mother or father that has heart disease or cancer, that does not have to be your destiny. We all are in charge of how we age and how we live our lives, and I think knowledge is power, and that's why I'm really excited to be participating in your educational series.
Excellent. Sherry, thanks very much. All the best, and take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This concludes this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. We hope you have enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview. SNU is produced monthly and is a division of Holly Health Services located in Burnaby, British Columbia. For details regarding subscription, please visit CoreyHolly.com or call us toll-free at 1-866-922-2229. This is Lisa Holly, wishing you the very best of health and wellness for life.
Represent his lifestyle. New way of life. Listen. It's SNU. Sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight. Malik with Sports Nutrition Update. Prolong your life. Live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHolly.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see ya changing heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.